Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Bob Thibodeau with the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast, and you are listening to Life Transformation Radio with my good friend Sean Douglas. Be sure to subscribe to his podcast so you will not miss any of the upcoming episodes, and be blessed in all that you do.
Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Sean, are you there? We seem to be having technical difficulties.
Hey, Eric, are you with us?
Hey. Yeah, can you hear me?
Hey, we're here now.
All right.
I was like, hello? It was like an awkward moment, right, where technology kind of sucks for a second, right?
Well, yeah. I was like,
hey, we're here now.
I'd be having technical difficulties.
Yeah, all good, man. So how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Doing very good.
Awesome, man. I'm so pumped to have you here, man. I really am. I'm super excited because we kind of – kind, I mean, you more than me, but we're kind of like in the same realm together, you know, with like resilience and mindfulness, but you take it to a whole nother level. Like you're like, you went all the way there. This is awesome.
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, I think that's what is exciting is we do some of the similar things in the military. We both work in the military.
Right.
And I just decided, hey, let's follow some of this research and let's see how far we can go. Like what's working the best for me. And so there's several things, but mindfulness definitely being one of them.
Absolutely, man. And we're going to dive deep today. We're going to dive deep into what you do into mindfulness, okay? But first, I want to do a little intro here. So I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, business positioning strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 66 countries, such as the United States, Sweden, Iceland, UK, all around Europe, Asia, Australia, New Zealand. So I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that has changed our lives and how we use this to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. We are live right here on Blog Talk Radio at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, which definitely makes things super special when we have technology issues in the beginning of a show because we are live and everybody can hear it. So here we are. We're live right here on a Thursday night, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community. Never miss an episode by subscribing. And then leave us a rating and a review so that we know how well we're doing. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, and Google Play Music app. On the show, I have entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, podcasters, authors, amazing people who are impacting the world around them. And my guest today does exactly that. If you have any questions for any of the guests that I bring on the show, this is a live broadcast, so you can call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. Today we're talking to my friend Eric Leslie. We're going to be talking about present moment focus, post-traumatic stress, post-traumatic growth, and exactly what it is that he does better than anybody I know. So this episode is called Present Moment Focus with Eric Leslie. When Eric was just 20 years old, he was in a car accident that changed his life. His girlfriend was killed in the accident, and he had suffered a major concussion. He developed post-traumatic stress, and throughout the next 2 years, went through many hard times. Then he saw a Time magazine article that claimed the best natural stress reliever was mindfulness meditation. He discovered that meditation helped him to be a better athlete while playing college baseball and helped his grades improve with less effort. Throughout college, he started to wonder if there was any evidence for this experience or if he was just crazy. Eric found that meditation had merged into the psychology world, and research indicates meditation was starting to reveal the benefits that he was experiencing. He decided to get his master's in psychology and study meditation and flow states, which many athletes call it the zone. He was trained to become a mindfulness meditation teacher through UMass Medical School. And using technology, he measures the effects that his clients have gained through the practice of meditation. Eric learned that by developing a mindful training practice, he could start to regulate and control his thinking and his emotions. This allowed him to influence your physiology and change your relationship to life. Eric found a way to be able to shift his PTS into post-traumatic growth. Now, what you could do is go to SatiMind, SatiMind.com, SatiMind.com. Go to Eric with a K, EricLeslie.com. All show notes, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, in the show notes are all of his links. Connect with him if you want to learn about mindfulness, about meditation, and the benefits of that practice. So, Eric, man, the first question that I have to ask is why. What is your big, deep why for what you do?
Man, there's a lot of that. I think more than anything, you're just happy for no reason. That's the first thing. Like, life doesn't have to be perfect. You can just be happy for no reason. And I don't know what that's worth to anybody, but for me, that's worth a lot. So that's, like, number one over anything. Like, I could just feel good just from a few minutes of practicing this. That's real simple. There's some other ones we could talk about as well, but, you know, we have increased performance. It was easier to play sports. And easier to play it at a high level because my focus was incredible. My concentration was better than anybody else on the field.
Really? How so?
Well, so I had this experience where I was injured 1 year in college baseball, and I said, Coach, listen, my knee is not doing well. Maybe you should move me down to the lineup. And he said, well, listen, we're going to keep you there. You might start hitting not so good, but – you know, we're going to keep you. I was batting like two or three in the lineup. And he said, listen, we're going to keep you there. If you start to hit bad, I'll take you out. I said, okay. I started to hit somewhere around 400 for the next 20 games. And he looked at me and he said, I thought you were hurt. And I said, man, I am. I can't even turn some of the singles into doubles at times. And he said, I know that, but you're hitting great. What is it that you're doing that you weren't doing last year? And you know what? Meditation was such a part of my life at that time, I didn't even know. I had to think about it a while, and it wasn't until a little later I went to the state fair. If you've ever been to the fair or anything like that, it's hard to throw those balls through the hoops and to, you know, make the shots. And I started making all of them, and my buddy goes, dude, you're really good. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm just getting lucky. And he's like, yeah, but don't you meditate? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, dude, I think that's helping you. Well, come to find out, it's so much easier to focus on certain points that was the reason I was doing better at sports. And I didn't even know it because meditation had just become a part of my daily life. And we didn't expect this. This was early 2000s, you know. This was 2004, 2005.
Right. Wow. No kidding.
Yeah.
So you literally changed your mindset just by instituting a meditation and mindfulness habit.
Oh, absolutely. I think you change You could be upset and you go into that meditation and you're going to come out at least better on the other end. I mean, it varies how that might affect you, but you do it over time and absolutely your whole world starts to shift. I mean, there are things that started to happen. Like a lot of times people think it's their exterior world, the world outside of what you define you to be, as that is the problem with life. And if you're thinking that, even in major ways at times, you know, but oftentimes if you're thinking that, especially too often throughout the day, it's really your internal world that you need to look at. And there's no other way to do that except through, you know, looking at your thoughts and your emotions and the stories you tell yourself from day to day.
Oh my gosh, how true is that? Dude, we tell ourselves so many stories. I'm not good enough. And we're like terrible with each other.
And
we're like terrible to each other.
Most of them, and to ourselves. We're absolutely terrible to ourselves, sometimes other people. Yep. And most of these stories, if you just take them and look at them, they're not even true.
Right. Yep. Yep. And you know what I really want to get into that I think would be super cool for the listeners to listen to would be the conversation that we have about how your brain fills in the missing pieces and your brain ends up telling you a story that you really want to believe. There's a little bit of unconscious bias, like in, you know, spread out through different things. But I think it's fascinating that you can go back and really think, and you can use, you know, meditation doesn't have to be breathing. It doesn't have to be, you know, anything other than you reflecting, right? Really, when I think about mindfulness, I'm like, right? And there's been times where I've there and did like a mindfulness, you know, session, and I'm just reflecting, and I was like, it was me that thought that way. It was me. They didn't do it. They didn't give me any evidence to prove the thought that I was having, but I ran away with that thought. I ran away, you know, and I was like, man, this is gonna happen. I know what's gonna happen, and this, that, and the other, and then it doesn't. I'm like, oh well. So my brain told me a story, but it wasn't true.
Oh yeah, we almost do this as a survival mechanism. You know, it's kind of like, well, I needed, like in the old days, it was, you know, back in the caveman days, it was like, well, I needed to remember that the lions were over there, and I needed to remember that the poison berries are over there, and if I don't, I'm not gonna survive. So I need to remember the negative as much as possible. And it's not quite as, you know, it's not quite like that in our life today. We don't necessarily have those types of threats, but our brain automatically does it just as this automatic thing. And so we kind of need to just at least be aware of that, because even the awareness of it can help us to shift it and not believe that story all the time.
Oh, 100%, man. 100%. So let's go back to that transformational moment in your life. Let's talk about that for a little bit. It sounds like just from reading it, you went through like not one, but like three transformational moments that's led up to this point. So talk about the transformational moment that changed your life and then put you on the path to what you're doing now.
Yeah, I definitely think it was multiple ones, but there's one, I mean, there's several that stick out that I could talk about. One that's hitting me right now was this time where I went, you know what, I'm part of the situation. So the situation with my girlfriend, you know, and dying in the car wreck was one of the harder things I've ever gone through in my life. And of course, there were other things like people investigating the wreck and all that kind of stuff, and that was hard to deal with. But the hardest thing was just she wasn't there anymore. You know, you felt that you had some responsibility in what went on, and at the same time, you don't know. I still don't know what I could have done to try to shift and not make that consequence from happening. But I finally said, whether I know that or not, I have to take responsibility for my part in it and for where I am in life. And I'm not going to be a victim of what life does to me. I'm going to go out. This story isn't written.
Right. Right. Who was driving?
I was driving. So
that's got to be tough.
There was that responsibility. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Definitely.
It's got to be tough, right?
I mean, look back and try to say, hey, you know, what could we have done different? And, you know, there's always what if. And,
oh, definitely.
Those can eat you up.
And I'm sure the blame, too. You know what I mean? Like you said, responsibility, that blame that I was driving the car, I was responsible for it, I was, you know. And you know, I mean, I don't know what the situation was, you know, but if it's, say, it's like a drunk driver or somebody, or, you know, somebody else caused the accident, it's almost like there's literally nothing that I could, like, we wore our seatbelts, we did everything. It was just somebody, you know, wasn't paying attention, you know, whatever. So it's like, you rack your brain, and sometimes there's not anything else that you could have done, right? I mean, there just is not anything. And I'm sure going back into a car days or weeks after that accident was probably really emotional.
Oh, yeah. And you started telling yourself stories about basically, because I think, For me in this accident, without getting into too much detail, that would be another conversation, but there were things that I felt like might have made a difference, and then there, of course, were things that were like, you know, who knows? Like, I don't know if there was anything I could have done, but it didn't matter. What mattered is I started telling myself a story that I wasn't a very good person, and that I was an evil person, and I didn't have any, you know, ill intentions. There was anything bad that was going on, but it didn't matter because I wasn't good enough in this certain situation. I now am telling myself a story that wasn't really true.
100%. Yeah, man, that's tough because, you know, we all go through these moments and we all go through these trials and tribulations, you know, and you know, we literally tell ourselves, like, you know, at first it's like, oh, it's okay, I can handle it, it's fine, I'm okay. And then, you know, we're not okay. And then we go through things that don't make us okay. You know, so then we tell a story about how it's all our fault. And then we're blaming ourselves. And in this talk about the stories that we tell ourselves, I talk about the toxic two, where you blame yourself and then you become an all or nothing mentality. Right, so you blame yourself, and that's I always mess things up. I never do anything right. Right, so now you're blaming yourself. I mess things up, and then you add in the always, never, like, absolutes. I'm always messing things up. I can never do anything right. I'm never gonna be, you know, better. I'm always gonna be this crap, you know, whatever. And then we start to believe ourselves. The more time you start to do that, times you start to believe yourself, and that's what leads to suicide ultimately.
And major
the more
major
times you travel down that road,
you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And so in psychology there are 11 different, we won't go into them all, but there are 11 different what we call cognitive distortions, and you're talking about two major ones right there. There's also just negative thinking, like catastrophizing, emotional reasoning, all those types of things. And so, you know, there's a ton of
I call them catastrophizers.
And some of these, and you don't have to be depressed to have these happen. But if you don't know that they're going on, they can really seep into different parts of your life. And, you know, whether it's performance or stress, you're just not as optimal as you could be.
Absolutely, ma'am. Absolutely. Well, how have you taken these transformational moments? How have you taken your experience in the accident, going back to school, becoming a trainer, and even right now, this moment, how are you taking what you know and what you've learned and focusing on changing lives and elevating lives?
Yeah, well, I think that, first of all, it's understanding that you have this story. Maybe you're telling yourself the wrong one, but then it's insert the story that you want. Because, listen, whether it's a bad story or a good story or whatever, it's all you're kind of making it up anyways. So you might as well make it up so that it's resourceful for you, you know, meaning it's going to serve you in some shape or form. So for me, one of the things I start telling myself is, well, because of the accident, I'm going to make my life and the people's lives around me and that need a similar transformation, I'm going to make their lives better. So this is going to change so many people's lives because of one accident where my friend made a sacrifice now so that everyone else could have better lives, including myself, because I deserve that and so do other people.
Yeah.
That's a new story. Now we've created something we can work with.
That's true. Yeah.
So that's one. I think another one is just the ability to, you know, in any situation, stay calm and try to transform. Now, I'm not perfect. It doesn't always happen for me. But it happens multiple times throughout a day still, and people might not even realize it. But, you know, something happens, you take a deep breath, you recenter. That ability to do that, a lot of it came from sports. You know, oh, strike two, 0-2 right now. Okay, this is a really good pitcher. How are you going to overcome an 0-2 count here, you know? And your mind's going, well, you're going to strike out. That's how you're going to overcome it. And you're going, you know what? You can think that. But I'm going to focus in on what I can control, and this guy's going to have to make a really good pitch to strike me out. And the same can be for in life. That can be a metaphor for how you want to approach life.
I'm amazed and fascinated on how our brains tell us these different stories. It's the only conclusion I can think of, and I know what the research says. And I mean, your brain would really love it if you were naked in a beanbag chair eating Cheetos inside of a plastic bubble, and that's all you did every day, because we're wired for survival, right? We do something dangerous, we do something hard. Our bodies are wired for survival. That's why people just survive, like, you know, 4-story falls, you know, because your body's in like defense mode. They're like pumping you full of chemicals, you know, so that you don't break your back or your skull or like something. You know what I mean?
So here's the trick. You're right, because a lot of this trick, and here's what the research is starting to tell us. So when they first started checking out the brain and what was happening in meditation, they thought, oh, certain parts of the brain are going to turn on. And they were waiting for that. They were waiting for them to activate.
Right.
Well, they got really confused, because actually what happens is parts of the brain turn off. What? What's going on? Why is parts of the brain turning off? Well, come to find out, we're shutting off different pieces of the mind, or at least tuning them down, so that we don't actually listen to the mind quite as much. The mind is a great tool. You can use it. But if that's the only thing you're using, you're probably not being as successful as you could be. You're probably not as happy as you could be. So part of it is, how do you turn down the inner critic and not even believe some of those things if they do come up? That's a lot of what meditation becomes.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, so I think some people don't know, you know, what meditation is. You know, they think that you're crossing your legs and cut your fingers all in a circle, like om, like all that stuff, you know. That's not it. That's not what meditation is. So tell us, what does a meditation practice look like?
Yeah. So I think today we're starting to define it differently. When people think of the word meditation, they do. They think of Eastern practices. And some of them come from Eastern practices, but they have been around in the West a long time. We just call them different things. We call them form of meditation, right? One of the cardinal skills in the realm I'm in, like human performance psychology, is focus. And so my dad used to tell me, focus, when he was out there. You know, I'm about to head into the batter's box, and I'm going, what the heck does he want? Like, I know he wants me to hit the ball, but what is this focus thing?
Right.
So first, it's focus, and the attention actually is clinical words for that, like attention control. So the basic form of it is focus on one thing. Doesn't matter what that one thing is. Oftentimes in meditation, it's the breath, right? Because breathing has these other effects on the body. So it's one of the better things. But if the mind wanders, and it will eventually, given enough time, usually a lot of research says about 8 to 10 seconds, but it wanders somewhere else, notice that it wandered and bring it back. Just do your best to continue, and that's resilience. right there, right? I mean, you have to be really resilient to continue to bring it back. And now really it's super, super simple, but you are just practicing focus and concentration. And I think people get they get all confused about, oh, am I taking on some other beliefs? No. Do you believe in focus? Do you believe in concentration? Do you believe that you can expand your attention from 10 seconds maybe to a minute? Because if you can, which I know people can, this is what we train, you're going to improve performance in every area of your life very quickly.
Very cool, man. Very cool. So how long should a meditation practice be?
Yeah, so this is a great question. And one of the ways that I am sort of redefining some of this for our leader or for our listeners and for my clients is that actually there are five levels that we've categorized. And these don't just come from me. They come from like Daniel Goleman and Richie Davidson wrote a cool book. And I just expanded on that because but basically there's five different levels. And the fifth level is like what we think of traditionally as a meditator that's, you know, maybe they're more like from Eastern religions or something, or just very much a part of the traditions and religion or whatnot. But we are also finding that like level one would be a very beginner. That's somebody who, you know, is just kind of interested, wants to find out. Maybe some of your listeners are investigating, and this is still a really good stage. You're reading some books. Right. Maybe you try it. And so there are different levels. Level two would be more like, okay, I'm going to do it at my desk. I'm really going to try to, you know, maybe do a practice for 5 or 10 minutes. And so you have to kind of ask yourself, where are you at? You know, there's level three and level four, just kind of in the middle of those. And you have to ask yourself where you're at, because you don't want to sit down. You know, if someone's never meditated, I wouldn't tell you to sit down for 20 minutes and try to do this. Although, hey, if you could, that's what I did at first. I mean, I started doing it for 20, 30 minutes and I worked my way up to an hour real quick. Now, I use technology, and a lot of people that I know are starting to use more and more technology. So we can sit down and you can do just the formal focus on your breath, and when your mind leaves, bring it back. I would highly recommend that, but sometimes that's difficult for people. And so I use different types of technology. You know, they have some neurofeedback. We have some biofeedback. I use something called binaural beats to start doing it. And without getting into too much detail, there's just different types of technology we have now that are integrating to help people do that. Not only track their progress, but get into deeper states and get the benefits of meditation without sitting there learning this practice for 5 years, you know, or even, you know, usually it takes like a couple years to kind of really get in and learn. Although I think that some of the classes like the mindfulness-based stress reduction class, which is the most studied class, that could help you pretty quickly within, you know, several weeks to develop a practice. But besides that, I think it is hard for somebody to do that. So I would say, depending on where you're at, start with 5 minutes. Work your way up. Work your way up to 7 minutes and then 10, and then just keep working your way up. And a lot of people go, well, maybe I could do 10 minutes right off the bat. And I'm like, I would suggest doing 2 5-minute sessions, because it's the habit. It's the habit of going every day when you wake up in the morning or every day before you go to sleep and meditating that 5 minutes. Once you get the habit, then you can up the time a little bit. That's the very beginning. That's how I would. Yeah. That's how I always have start. And you know, I work with a lot of military soldiers, and they'll look at me and they go, "You know, maybe I could do 5 minutes. I'm not sure." And I look at them and go, "Oh, are you kind of busy?" And they go, "Yeah, freaking super busy. You don't." And they'll name all the things they got. And of course, they're in the military, man. They got a lot of things going on, you know. And I said, "You got 1 minute?" And they go, "You know what? I got 1 minute." And I say, "Well, you know what? Start with 1 minute. Odds are you're going to do more than 1 minute because you're going to find the benefits, but even 1 minute will start to help you, get you on the path."
Yeah. So you mentioned technology, and, you know, what I use is the Headspace app. So when I want to do mindfulness or meditation, there's some guided meditations where the guy is literally like, "Now, you know, let all the, you know, it, like exhale, let all the fear out, let everything, you know, inhale, you know, good memories, inhale positive energy, exhale negative energy, you know, breathe in for five, hold for two, let go for five, you know, and then squeeze your arms and then let go, and then squeeze, you know, tense your body and then let go, tense your body and let go, you know, put your legs straight, stand up, sit down, like all this other stuff, you know, and you're like doing all these things. I want you to think about this. I want you to think about this. I want you to feel the tension in your body and then feel it release. And then feel the tension in your body, you squeeze hard, and then release it all. You know, and so this goes on for a minute. There's a 5 minute, there's a 10 minute, there's, you know, whatever. There's a lot of guided meditations on this thing, but the Headspace app is what works for me. It's right on my phone. I just go to the app, push play, and, you know, what the thing is there is what I use. You know, there's scripts that you can read. There are, you know, there's music that you can listen to. There's the guided meditations that I do because I want to make sure that I'm doing it the right way. But now there's no excuse. Like mindfulness and meditation. When Time Magazine, okay, when Time Magazine comes out and says that mindfulness is the new hotness, people take notice. Design. People take notice.
Yeah, that was more than 15 years ago. And, you know, at that time, and this is a weird story I tell people sometimes, but I was kind of like, people would be like, you know, I would tell them I do meditation, and they would like look at me really weird. Like, you know, I'm the weird kid in the room. And somewhere around 3 to 5 years ago, and cause you're talking about meditation being the hotness. Now I tell people, yeah, I meditate, and they go, oh, that's cool. How do you do that? And I don't know where that shift happened. But that started to happen over the last 3 to 5 years. And, of course, I've always been really into it, so I don't care that much what you're going to think of it because it's impacted my life. But what I tell people is, why aren't you meditating? If you want to be happier, if you want to relieve stress, if you want to perform better, if you want that promotion at work, if you want a high-performing organization, why aren't you doing it? I mean, my goal is to get 10% of this planet meditating. Maybe I'll die before that goal happens, but I don't think so. I think,
we
have to shift our consciousness on this planet, and I want to be a part of getting 10% of the planet meditating. And so what I've done is said, listen, you can set up a basic meditation practice if you come to my site and you see what we got going on. I'll at least give you the basics on everything. You want to dive deeper? We got some stuff for that too, but I just want everyone to at least get the basics and be able to start this. And whether you want to go to the Headspace app, fine. You know, there's the Calm app. There's all these different options, and do what works for you. I don't want people to get, overwhelmed by all of it. Cause at the end of the day, you just need to pick one and go with whatever works best for you.
100%.
Some of it's trial and error.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. No, there's a couple times where like, oh man, you gotta try this thing. Like what did you say? The binary, whatever, the tones or whatever. But there's been things that I've tried. I haven't tried that, but the things that I've tried, and somebody's like, oh my God, like this is a lifesaver. This is the new hotness. This is whatever. And I'm like sitting here. I'm like, okay. I'm like looking at my watch. I'm like, I'm so over this. Like, I'm not even remotely interested. You know, like trying to keep it open mind here. All right, it's been 5 minutes. I gotta get out of here. You know, so you know everything.
Right.
Everything works differently for everyone. So just find what works for you. Simple breathing in out, right? Breathing in out, and just secluding yourself for about 5 minutes, and going into your mind is a way. Having a coach show you. Having apps, visualization scripts, there's a ton of ways to do it. And that's what I think I love the most about mindfulness and meditation is that it's so moldable and it's so new and people are still learning it.
And it makes such a difference. You know, we study all these different skills and what we're finding is that you could combine all the significant skills that we have, imagery, self-talk, you know, being aware of these biases, you know, thought replacement, all these things.
Yep.
And if you take them and add them all together, you still don't get some of the results that mindfulness can produce of what they're showing that it can produce. And so 100%. We really have something that research is saying works incredibly well. Now, the only if there is a downside to it, it takes some effort on your part. It takes some practice, but, you know.
Right. Talk about the difference between mindfulness and meditation. What's that?
Most things that are worth it take effort. So
yeah, 100%.
Nothing new there.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So meditation is more of, and here's how I define it. I define meditation as that's a little more spiritual, in my opinion. So you're taking that focus and concentration, and you're putting it on whatever you want to call it, the universe, the divine, God, and that's what meditation is. And a lot of that, again, comes from the East. Mindfulness now is something that, and it's mindfulness meditation, is came from really the research out of this, came from the University of Massachusetts Medical School, and they started doing it at the hospital there, at the medical school in Massachusetts. And John Cabot-Zinn did this in 1979, if you can believe that or not. So he was one of the pioneers. And then they started to measure the results of this thing. And he wrote a book called Full Catastrophe Living, came out in 1990. It's kind of a thick book, but that was the groundbreaking research onto mindfulness meditation. And so most of the
wow.
time when you hear mindfulness or you hear even meditation, studies on meditation, it's something like you have a 50 to 60% chance that it came from this program. And that program is called the MBSR, or the Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction Program. So anytime
sure.
you're going to study that, and that's the certificate that I have as well. I went through that program because there's nothing else that can train you as well as that, even though maybe some of the traditions, which I've been through as well, because some of the traditions have a very good way of training you as well. And so that's the difference between and that mindfulness, I do have to say, is more like, hey, let's take some of the health research, you know, stress resilience, stress reduction, and let's take what's happening in the body, neuroscience, and let's mix that and with some of the meditation stuff, with some of the mindfulness stuff. But let's teach it in a universal way. Let's take out some of the actual,
right.
like, traditions and beliefs just so people can get the benefit of that. And I think that's key, to teach it in this universal way. So it doesn't matter what belief you have, you can come and get the benefit from this mindfulness meditation. And I think that is one of the really cool things that John Kabat-Zinn had done with some of the mindfulness meditation.
Very cool. Yeah, I totally love the research. And one of the research studies, because I love knowing why. I'm a why guy. I have to know why things are the way they are. And I have to know that this is the truest form of why this is. And one of the things that I know to be true, the fact-based positive psychology research studies that have been done and continue to be done is absolutely fascinating. I used one of them in my TEDx talk called Hack Your Brain for Success. The TEDx talk that I gave talked about a research study called the White Bear Phenomena. And that White Bear Phenomena, and they tried all kinds of things. They tried cars, trucks, houses, teddy bears, green, blue, purple, black, brown, white, you know, red, whatever. They tried everything. And for some reason, out of all the questions and everything all the research that they did, the white bear is what people gravitated towards the most. They told themselves stories about it. They internalized it, maybe because of Santa Claus and the Coca-Cola bears. I have no idea. But they had a picture of a white bear and a baby bear, a polar bear. And they said, for a minute, I want you to look at this thing. And all they said was, don't look at the close your eyes and don't think of the polar bear. Whatever you do in this next minute, don't think about the polar bear. I don't want you to think about anything about any bears whatsoever. No bears. No white bears, no polar bears, no nothing. I want you to think about this bear. And they did that for a minute. I do not want you to think about the bear. Do not think about the bear. Do not think about the bear. After a minute, they were like, who thought about the bear? And everybody's like, hello? Like, you kept saying it, so yes. like three quarters of the room absolutely remembered, like they could not stop thinking about this bear. Now they would say, "Don't think about the car. Don't think about the car. Don't think about the car. Don't think about the car." What people would do is go, "Oh, I'm gonna think about my car. Well, I'm gonna think about, you know, whatever." And they would think about, "Don't think about this, you know, whatever." And, but they would do it anyways. But it's something about the white bear. And what I thought fascinating about it was there's a level of acceptance that has to happen when you're going through the meditation and mindfulness practices. There's a level of acceptance there. And people don't want to accept certain things. Right?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Talk about that.
Well, yeah. So I think it's difficult because when you say acceptance, a lot of times we think, well, let's accept something that, you know, we don't want to be happening, like our kids misbehaving. Well, what are you telling me? I should just accept this? No, this is not appropriate behavior, and it needs to be corrected. And
right.
So, okay, that is not exactly what we're talking about when we talk about acceptance. You still might have to accept that your kid did that. Whether or not you liked it or not, you still have to accept that it happened. And once you can accept that it happened, you can take appropriate action. But if you're accepting that it happened, you're going to react differently than if that just totally appalled
right.
you. And it might totally appall you, but your kid still needs to potentially go through a learning process here. And you need to be the catalyst to help them do that. And if you just start getting angry at them, that might not be the catalyst that needs to happen at that time. And so, you know, and a lot of that is, how about people dealing with pain? You know, we have this a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We teach the MBSR. And so people
right.
with pain are just, I can't accept that I have pain in my right shoulder. And I'm like, well, the sooner you do that, the sooner you can start to transform the pain.
Right.
Because a lot of that pain is going to be physical and it's just going to be there for a little bit. But a lot of it, again, is that story you've added to it. So the mind wants to do two things at the core of the mind. It wants to push things away. We call that aversion. Like, I don't want that. That's not what I want. I'm not doing it, kind of the opposite of acceptance. And the
right.
other part is it wants. It want, I want, I want. We call that like more attachment. Like, I just want things, right? And so if you sit with your mind long enough, you're going to find that I want to get up. Oh, I want to go do my to-do list. Oh, I got things over here to do. Wanting, wanting, wanting. And so if you can just become aware of that process and more accept that the mind's going to do that, well, then you're not reacting to life all the time. You're more responding, and you're responding with space. You're responding with care. You're responding with kindness, maybe even empathy. And so all of these things start to come through the ability to just accept what's happening in the moment. And that is present moment focus. It's what is happening now in this moment. And present moment is so different, you know, whether you're even meditating. So many times I spent hours and hours meditating, and many times it's just meditation. It's still my own brain, but it's so different sometimes from moment to moment. The quality can be different.
Right.
The experience can be different. And the more you can be present with life and yourself, the better. But our culture will train you to do the opposite.
Right. Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah, because, you know, like negativity sells. Look at the news. Look at movies. Look at, you know, like negativity sells.
Yeah. Advertising these days, they actually set it up. And this is where the 8 seconds of focus came in, is it was advertising that studied this. And they said, well, if people can't hold their attention for more than about 8 seconds, let's switch the script every 8 seconds. So unless it's something a little bit older, watch the next commercial or watch the next thing. It bounces at least every 8 seconds. Shoot, Facebook, how long do you have to make a decision on something? I think it's 3 seconds as you're scrolling through. If you can't catch someone's attention in 3 seconds, they're moving on to the next thing on Facebook. And so it's everywhere. You know, we plan things. Hey, what are you doing this weekend? It's not, hey, what are you, you know, it's nothing about the present moment usually. You know, we have all these
right.
plans for what's going to happen in the future. And planning is important. I'm not saying that it's not, but it just oftentimes doesn't help us to cultivate the present moment.
Absolutely. And mindfulness is, to me, all about being in the moment. You know, it's being mindful, like the definition, being mindful. I'm aware. I'm situationally aware. I have, you know, acute senses or, you know, whatever. Like, I'm pinpointed, fully present, fully engaged, no distractions. So when I think about mindfulness, you know, it's like, what am I smelling? What am I tasting? Like, when you taste your food, like, what am I tasting? What does it feel like? The food in my mouth, what does it feel like? You know? So sometimes you could do this by, you know, just like sensory, like touching things, you know, and like really like feeling how that, because a lot of times it's like, oh my God, check out this shirt. Like, see what this feels like. You know, you're like, oh, cool, cool, whatever. But if you really take a moment to like just kind of hold that, like be fully present with that, a lot of times life will change. If somebody says, hey, I really need you to think about this, I'm like, okay, let me be fully present. Right now, let me be fully present in what you're saying.
Because,
and really internalize that. That's life-changing.
Because so there's a difference, right? If you're going to sit down and you're going to actually take time out to meditate and focus on your breath or whatever your focus point might be, well, that's what we call formal practice. You might now be talking about more informal. And a lot of times, whether you're formal or informal, it's body sensations that we're focused on. And so that's what you're saying. It's taste. It could be how the body feels. It could be, you know, if you're hot, if you're cold. So all these different sensations that the body happens, a lot of times we just ignore them, right? We're trained to ignore what the body's doing. Like when you hopped in the shower last, what were you thinking about? You know, probably you don't even remember,
right?
But it probably wasn't just taking a shower. You probably weren't feeling the water on your skin. You probably weren't really feeling the soap that you had in your hand. Your mind was probably somewhere else. And so, you know, the same with eating.
Right.
That you're talking about. It's like you could sit there and just enjoy a meal. How about chewing your food until you take another bite? Oftentimes anymore, you know, we already have that other bite ready to go, and we're not even done chewing the one before.
Yeah, right. Right. So
that's
what do we do, man?
To life.
So what do we do? You're a present moment focus expert. So are we developing a routine to be fully focused? I mean, what does it mean to be present moment focused? What exactly does that mean?
Yeah, well, I think you need a way to train yourself. You need what I call a mental training practice. And so even in the military, oftentimes we say stand up if you train the mental side of what goes on. And most of them don't. So we say, well, you need some sort of mental training. And so that is the formal side of meditation, because my biggest thing is that formal side. If you sit down, even if it's for a minute, maybe it's 5 minutes like we talked about, but if you can sit down just for that period, you're retraining the brain. And what you'll find is that that'll start to bleed into other areas of your life. Now, it's really cool to remember these things and use them throughout your daily life. But it's too easy to forget them or to not be able to cultivate it. Even I've done this for over 15 years. It still really can be difficult to get the quality of presence if I haven't done my meditation practice. Even if I take a couple breaths in the moment, let's say I'm in traffic and I'm aggravated, a couple of breaths. That will help, definitely. But if I've already done an hour of meditation or maybe even 30 minutes of meditation earlier, that quality, that quickness, that recovery is going to be there even quicker. And it's going to be there with less effort. And so what I tell people is it's the routine of continually training yourself to do this. And even 5 minutes, we know 10 minutes for sure changes the brain. Now, I have a theory that even 5 minutes can start to retrain the brain. We just don't have the research on that yet. But 10 minutes,
right,
we know,
right,
does that for sure. So, yeah, some sort of routine, because it's training. I mean, how do you get better at going to the gym? This is going to the gym for your mind. You know, I can't say, hey, if you pick up a weight every now and then, hey, you might get a little stronger. Maybe. But if you go to the gym for 30 minutes a day, you're probably going to get stronger.
Right.
And so it's the same with meditation. It's the same with mental training.
Yeah, I love that, man. Love it. So what does the rest of 2019 look like, man? Talk about Sati Mind. You know, where's Sati Mind headed, and, you know, how did that get developed and all that?
Yeah, so, well, a lot of it came from just training people and seeing the results. We've we started measuring some of the results that we've gotten with smaller units, and we didn't get much time with them. And we thought, oh, there probably won't be any measurable results. We've only gotten, you know, 30 minutes or an hour with some of these guys. And so then we compared those results that we got to the MBSR, that 8-week course of like 30 hours. And so we found that, oh my gosh, there actually is a measurable result, even just with small amounts of training. And so we thought, well, other busy people can use this. Oh my gosh, man. And, you know, management teams can use this, and, you know, policemen and just anybody that has stress on their lives can start to use this and start to perform better and just be a little bit happier. So we thought, man, let's bring this into the world. And so that's kind of how Saudi Mind developed. But Saudi Mind has kind of gone in lots of different directions. For example, we've now found that there's a need for teachers to teach this. So, you know, a lot of people in the world of psychology have said, listen, I'm so interested in what you're doing with mindfulness and the results you're getting, but I don't know how to do it. And they'll say, hey, can you get on the phone with me for an hour and, you know, show me kind of what you're doing? Well, yes and no. I can't tell you I can't make you a meditation teacher in an hour. But what we can do is we can start to now have some of these classes. So that's part of what it's doing. It's also found its way into hospitals, I think, because a lot of those people are caretakers. Yeah, they're caretakers, but they got no one taking care of them. And so we've found that doctors and nurses and, you know, the women's health clinic. And then so we started there, and then we had like 8 other clinics come and be like, yeah, like we really like what's going on. Can we get involved too? And it was like, wow, okay, yeah, you can. Let's figure out how we can start to do this. And so Saudi Mind came that way. We just were approached by some minor league hockey teams. We don't know what's going to come from that there, but it's still in the sports realm because we know it impacts performance better than anything. Not only does it reduce stress, it increases performance quite a bit. So, you know, there's multiple different aspects that it does. And then, of course, we got the coaching and just support products to really get people on the right path. Like, how do you use this? Like, what I want are groups of people that start to do meditation because of some of the things that we're doing. Again, trying to get not only groups of people, but individuals meditate. How do we get as many people into this as possible? And I don't know if meditation is the right word. Maybe it's mental training, but everybody understands, I think, any more meditation.
No, absolutely, man. Absolutely. So let's do a shameless plug. As we start to wrap the show, let's do a shameless plug. You can plug friends, quotes, websites, Facebook, your job, whatever you want to do. You can plug right here. Shameless plug moment. Go.
I don't know what shameless plug moment is, but I'm going to take I am not anybody without the people around me. And so, you know, shout out to like Derek Bairstow, who is one of my colleagues who's helped me with Saudi Mind. Man, I wouldn't be the guy I'm in today. And my family, they're incredibly credible people. And so my friends and family around me, you know, my mom and my dad, I have 3. I have a stepdad too, who's incredibly awesome. And even a sister-in-law. And so, man, I don't know where I'd be without friends and family really throughout my life, but definitely today. And so, you know, you really have to set up your environment to be the best it can be too. And you can't blame your environment. You need to go out and create that environment. And so that's also what we're trying to do with Saudi Mind. So, you know, 2019 has all those things, you know, wrapped up and ready to go.
Very cool, man.
Continue. There's a lot of work still to do.
Yeah, man. Very cool. I like it. So let's end the show with a nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action.
In every seed of adversity, there's an equal and greater benefit. So look to lean into those hard things that happen. Redefine what it is to be hard, and don't let your mind tell you a story that isn't true.
I love that. Don't let what about the story? Don't let your mind say it again.
Don't let your mind tell you a story that isn't true.
That isn't true.
No,
don't let your mind tell you a story that isn't
true. Ways. Yeah. Truth can be looked at in a lot of different ways. So find out what's most resourceful for you.
Awesome, man. Dude, it has been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend. You're doing amazing things, and I know just enough to keep pace with you, but you are far and beyond anything that I could hope to be in mindfulness and meditation and, you know, all that. I'm just a student of the game, man, and you are just absolutely crushing it. And I'm so happy for you.
I appreciate it. It's people like you, Sean, that help us out. And what an amazing show you got. I mean, it's just a great opportunity. It's such an honor to be on the show. It really is.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Any last words for our guests or for our listeners, I mean?
Yeah. If you haven't tried out meditation, find a way to make it work. It'll change your life. I don't care if it's through me or someone else, but if you're into any type of personal growth, why aren't you meditating?
Yep, absolutely. And for the listeners, connect with Eric. If you're kind of like, nah, I don't know, like I've heard about it, like just try it. Eric is the guy that you want to get in contact with. He's not going to try to sell you, spam you, anything like that. I know the guy personally, man. He's a solid, solid dude, and he's just so selfless and wants to serve, you know, on this mission that he's on. He's going to hook you up with exactly what you need, not what he can sell you. So when working with Eric, that is what you can expect, man. The guy's an absolute professional and he knows exactly what he's doing. So with that, my friend, thank you so much for coming on the show and being an amazing guest on Life Transformation Radio.
It's an honor. Blessings to you and your audience.
So Life Transformation Radio listeners, an amazing guest impacting the world around him. If anything resonated with you that we talked about today, let Eric or myself know. Go to SatiMind, SatiMind, SatiMind.com. You can also go to Eric with a K, ErikLeslie, EricLeslie.com. Look him up on Facebook, com/ Present Moment Focus. He's on LinkedIn and Twitter. Connect with him. Have a conversation. Try some meditation and mindfulness in 2019 because what do you got to lose? It's going to change your life, and he's going to help it make that happen. So with that, as I close the show, I always say live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart, and I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.